I don't know. Hey, Alexa, what's the definition of fable?
A fable is an abbreviated fictional story that aims to teach a moral lesson. Typically, animals or inanimate objects are portrayed as protagonists in the story, and anthropomorphism, or giving the characters human traits, is employed to convey the desired moral. Fables can be written in prose or verse and may feature other mythical creatures or natural forces as main characters.
Okay, that could work. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rock and Roll Fables with Kenny Bodkin. Okay, I got a story for you. Roy Orbison. He started out singing rockabilly and country and western as a teenager, and he was eventually in 1956 signed by Sam Phillips of Sun Records, who of course signed Elvis and Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins. But he really enjoyed his greatest success with Monument Records. From 1960 to 1966, 22 of his singles reached top 40 on Billboard. Songs that just go down in history now, like Running Scared, Crying, In Dreams, Oh Pretty Woman, and of course, Only the Lonely. So in the early 60s, he was working on a song which became Running Scared. You know, like it was based loosely on the rhythm of Bolero. Dun, 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 yeah. And so he was trying to record this, and it, there was some hesitation to it because you really can't dance to that song. And that's what everybody wanted back then, was something that the kids could dance to. So he went in to record this, and they had an orchestra in the studio, and he was just told he would have to sing louder than the orchestra, because the orchestra was unable to be softer than his voice, you know. So he tried it and tried it and tried it, and he really had a hard time getting all the notes, because he had this, he has an amazing range, Roy Orbison does, but he had a hard time singing over an orchestra, just volume wise. So in the first instance of this, the producer takes him over to a corner and surrounded him with coat racks and formed a kind of an isolation booth to emphasize his voice. After two takes that Roy was unhappy with, a third, he abandoned the idea of using falsetto and just sang the final high A note so naturally it blew everybody away. The musicians stopped playing. Running Scared was complete, and it was huge. Nobody heard anything like that before. He went on later to reach number 9 in the UK, and it was a pretty big deal for Roy at the time.
You can make my dream.
the song In Dreams. It was released in April of 63. And that month, Roy was asked to replace Duane Eddy on a tour of England. And he was going to be the headliner. And the opening act was The Beatles. And he arrived in Britain, he realized he was no longer the main draw. It was The Beatles. And he never had heard of The Beatles. And kind of, he was kind of annoyed. And he goes, "What's a Beatle anyway?" And John Lennon was right behind him. And he tapped him on the shoulder and said, "I am." On the opening night, Roy decided to go on stage first. Although he was the more established act, he was going to open for The Beatles. So The Beatles stood there backstage as Roy Orbison simply played his songs and got called back for 14 encores. 14. He was asked to come back, and he wasn't dancing around. He was his low rumble of a bass and his high tenor. And finally, when the audience began chanting, "We want Roy again," John Lennon and Paul McCartney physically held Roy back so they could go on and play. Ringo later said that in Glasgow, we were all backstage listening to his tremendous applause he was getting, and he was just standing there, not moving or anything. Throughout the tour, the two acts quickly learned to get along, and a process that was made easier by the fact that the Beatles really admire Roy Orbison's work, how can you not, and felt like Orbison felt a kinship with John, but he was super tight with George Harrison, who he would later be in the Traveling Wilburys with. He was asked quite often why you wear sunglasses on stage. And, it seemed to a lot of people that it was something was wrong with his eyes, or something was, he was doing it simply as to look tougher than he was, and that it was a image thing. But what it was way back in the day, he was touring with Patsy Cline, and wouldn't that have been a great show? Patsy Cline or Roy Orbison? He left his regular glasses in a hotel room, and he went on stage with his sunglasses, and it just kind of caught on with the audience. And from then on, he wore sunglasses every time he hit the stage. Isn't that something? Okay, I got a story for you. I am a U2 fan. Sometimes they make it hard to be a U2 fan, but I try to look beyond the stumbles and appreciate what they do, okay? U2 is an incredible band live. I've seen them on a number of occasions. I've purchased all of their music. Usually the day it comes out, I'll at very least listen to it the day it comes out. This last one, I don't know. But I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about 9th of May, 1997. I went to go see U2 at Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe, Arizona, for the Pop Mart tour. Now, I was very excited about going because this was Sun Devil Stadium. This is where they did Rattle and Hum, where they had that great moment in the film of Where the Streets Have No Name was filmed at Sun Devil Stadium. I'm figuring this is going to be incredible. And it was incredible. It was Pop Mart, but it wasn't the U2 we all know and love from Joshua Tree or Octoon Baby or they were trying something very, 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 very different. And it had varying levels of success. But this isn't really a story about you two. It's more of a story about me. I go into the stadium, and we have to, me and a buddy of mine, we have to climb down a whole bunch of the rows to get to the bottom level. We were on the ground floor, on the field, pretty close. We had relatively close seating. So we start going down, you know, these concrete stairs, and Rage Against the Machine was on the stage. And you know how the lights sometimes will play tricks with your mind and you will think you're at the bottom of it when you're really not? That's what happened to me. I was walking down the stairs and I thought we were at the bottom, and I tripped and I fell down about 7 more steps, like on my shins and on my knees, and was just splayed at the bottom of it. You know, any other show I would have, you know, been taken away on a stretcher. It was pretty bad. I was very bloody. I was messed up. My legs were, you know, we're dripping blood everywhere. It was not good. But I'm like, hey, no. This is a U2 show. Nothing bad can happen at a U2 show. These are great shows. I'm not going to miss a second of this. So I gathered my bearings and we made our way down to our seats. Now, the Pop Mart stage was, at the time, in 97, was the largest stage ever made for a rock show. Largest screen ever made for a rock show, okay? Big LED screen from one end of the stage to the other. It was huge. They had a huge golden arch in the middle of it. It was bananas. It was really a lot of show. They gave you a ton to look at during this show. So I was already bloody, you know. So I get out there and we sit down and we get geared up for the show. And U2 hits the stage. They come out to pop music, followed by Mofo. And it was all very, you know, very loud and exciting. And everybody in the stadium, on the floor at any rate, jumped up on their seats and were standing on their chairs. So the chairs were rickety metal chairs with like a foam seat on them, and it was on top of a tarp, which was on top of the turf, which was on top of the field of Sun Devil Stadium. So they were pretty wobbly and rickety. So I jump up on top of my chair, and just so I can see, and it, you know, I'm wobbling around and looking straight up at this big arc, and the whole, it definitely gave me a sense of vertigo. I was dizzy, and I couldn't walk straight after the show. It was incredible. I was, like I say, it was sensory overload. Okay, towards the end of the show, and I am dehydrated as hell by this time, having lost as much blood as I had. I waved down this guy who's selling Coca-Cola out of a 5-gallon bucket, and he is, sells me a Coke for $5. And I get back to the chair, I open it up, it explodes all over me. Okay, so I am sticky now. I'm covered in soda. And so the show ends, and I am bloody. I cannot walk straight, and I'm sticky like I'd been on a 3-day tequila bender. And I hadn't had a drink in several years at that point, and I was completely sober. But it was an incredible show. Isn't that something? You've been listening to Rock and Roll Fables with Kenny Bodkin. We can be contacted at kenny.d.bodkin@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and support your local musicians.
I want to listen to Nickelback.